Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down. Hey gang, it's Johnny. I just want to take a second to talk to you guys about engagement. Right now, you're listening to the show, and I'm not sure exactly what platform you're listening to it on. But whatever platform you're listening to it on, you can subscribe to it and get an alert every time a new show drops, usually every Tuesday and every Friday. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Whatever platform you're listening on, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, any platform, you can subscribe to it. And if you can leave a comment, leave a star, share it on your social media if it's something that you like, please do that. We encourage you to do that. And also, as far as social media goes, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Also, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Please do. Anyway, all I want to say is, you like a show, share it, use the hashtag How Did I Get Here Pod. We'll give you a shout out. Thank you so much for listening to the show and engage.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Hey, the vault.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host, and welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where we reach back into our vault of well over 1,000 episodes, pull one out, shine it up, and re-release it, just in case you missed it, or in case you want to hear it again. Gang, this is a great show today. This is going to answer some questions for those of you who might have just moved to Austin, or see a billboard a lot, or a guy on the side of a bus. Today, gang, we go back to episode 335 from December 2013 and talk to David Comey, the attorney that rocks. Have you ever been driving from the airport or around Austin? You see these giant billboards with this guy with dreadlocks and it says the attorney that rocks and you're like, who the fuck is that guy? Maybe you're driving down the road and a bus drives by because he's on the side of buses. And you're like, who is that guy? Who is the attorney that rocks? What does he do? Well, gang, he is my guest. He was my guest for episode 335 back in December of 2013. And we have a fantastic conversation. He's actually a musician. He's a musician. He has a band. And they were out rocking at the time and playing. I haven't seen him playing as much even before the pandemic. But he was out there playing in 2013. And he was doing gigs and he was releasing music. And he was having these shows where he'd open a bar tab and everyone would drink for free for like the time that he's on stage. Hello, genius. If you can pull that off, you can do anything. Anyway, I didn't know him. So I reached out to him and I was like, man, who the hell is this guy? I mean, I'm not trying to be rude or disparaging. He's an amazing person. He's a lovely, lovely person who does just good. He's just out there defending people. And in his life, he's adopted all these kids. It was just a really great conversation and not really what you would expect from that photo that you see on the billboard or on the sides of buses. So, this was so great. I was so glad he came over. I love having this show. This show, getting to reach out and be like, hey, dude, will you come over to my house and explain to me who the hell you are? A lovely, lovely man. All right. So, without further ado, from episode 335 back in December of 2013. This is me and the attorney that rocks, David Comey. Let's get down.
How did I get here from the vault?
All
I am, yeah.
Where did you go to school? Like there.
I moved in high school to Coral Springs.
Oh, wow, okay. I went to Miami Beach Senior High School.
I was born in Miami Beach at Mount Sinai Hospital. Yeah. And my dad went to Beach High. And
I went to Beach High. That's so weird.
Yeah.
You know who I was just with on Saturday night? I was in this band, Mr. Rocket Baby, in like the early 90s. And we did this, we reunited for a show on Saturday night. And the other singer guy's dad was the head of orthopedics there, Dr. Charles Weiss.
Small world.
Small world. Very small world. So you grew up there in Miami? Are you Jewish or Cuban?
I am half Jewish, half Anglo.
Okay, I'm Cuban.
Cuban, yeah.
That's always like the question from there.
Yeah, but I was baptized about 4 months ago with my wife and daughter, so.
Oh, wow. And you have a family, and you're a heavy dude. Like when I was telling people, by the way, Derek Morris said to say hi. I saw him at Space before I came back home.
I love that guy. He's just kind of expensive.
Yeah. So we've shared musicians. I played with him and you played with him. And I know the great Adam Temple plays in the Dharma Kings.
Yes. I wish I would have known Derek before he was so involved in the next stage of his life. I think we could have done some really cool things together.
Yeah. Yeah, he's always a great guy to have around playing with you. He's a great asset to any band.
Brilliant.
How did you, did you play music all your life? I mean, did you have a thing?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it before I come over here. Yeah, I was in band in high school, band in college, band in law school.
Okay.
In between, after, you know, it would go with in spurts depending on what I was into. I've been into other things than just music, so.
Right.
You know, if I was hardcore into tennis, then maybe I wasn't doing music. If I was hardcore into being a fresh young lawyer trying to make his name, maybe I wasn't doing it too much. But I always come back to it. It's therapy.
Yeah, it is therapy. It's nice to not have to depend on it, though, because that would drive you nuts. I mean, you have like the perfect thing. You're exactly what my dad thinks I should have done.
Well, it's a trade-off. You know, it's like, you know, I'm always thinking I'm too old. But, you know, to get established and the way that I am, you know, it takes some time. You probably, it'd be really hard to be split like that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot on your plate.
I got a kid in the house.
Yeah. How old is your kid?
She's 11.
Wow.
And we're trying to adopt a little girl from a Latvian orphanage. She's coming in this week for another 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're like also a tremendous family guy.
That's why it's like sometimes I'm not the greatest friend in the world because you have to be a good friend. You have to invest time in people.
Yeah.
And, you know, my family takes my time when I'm not trying to kind of accomplish something.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to do this. This is actually, I've always wondered about you. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that people are a lot of times already have preconceived notions. There's so many people that think I'm just sitting around rolling joints all day. You
know? Just your hair.
Yeah.
Okay. This is one thing that I will say. I was taken aback that your tone is so quiet and you're a quiet guy. Just the font and the way that you look in the billboard, I thought you would speak more aggressively.
Well, come see my band play.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw some video stuff. I was hoping I was going to make it that day to Batfest, but I had a gig and had to leave early that day.
But, well, that wasn't our great... Everybody was brand new in the band at that point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I switched all personnel, upgraded. As I was playing bigger stages, I started getting better musicians, and we were pretty new. As a matter of fact, there was our rhythm guitar player was with us about 4 practices and 1 gig, and that was it.
Yeah.
Like about 10 days.
So how much do you play? Like how many gigs does the Dharma Kings play?
You know, I don't travel that much,
right,
so you
right.
can't oversaturate.
Right.
So we usually have at least one big one a month, but sometimes two. It depends on what's coming through. We kind of latch on with some of these national acts, you know.
You did a show recently with Bullet Boys, right?
Bullet Boys, they were fantastic. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I'd barely heard of them before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and man, I was blown away. I thought they were like at the level of Social Distortion or Offspring or something. They were really that good. I was impressed.
Tremendous energy. I was wondering what kind of like what your music thing is, because there is some solo music out there of yours that's more acoustic. Let's go back. So you're a kid in Florida. How did you pick up music? What instrument did you pick up first? And did you want it, or did someone tell you you're going to learn this now?
Well, I had kind of a, I had a childhood I would not recommend. So I sought escape through music.
Me too.
And, you know, so it was like me and the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I wasn't playing, but I was just, it was my escape.
Yeah.
And then I, because of my surroundings, and it was just such a kind of unsafe place. I never had an instrument. I never could take the time to learn an instrument. I was always trying to get out of the house, you know?
Okay.
So I really didn't learn to play an instrument. I sang in bands, but I really didn't learn to play an instrument until I was in my 30s.
Okay. Did you sing in bands in Miami?
I sang in bands in, when I moved to Coral Springs, which is about an hour north. Right. Yeah, I was in a high school band. We did like Judas Priest covers. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
Is that what your first influences were? Like outside of the Beatles, then you got into like harder rock?
Well, yeah, I got into harder stuff. You know, it was like Aerosmith, AC/DC. I hate to say Ted Nugent because he's kind of a douche, but... you know, the harder stuff like that.
He's
it was
a douche,
rock.
But like you can't deny Stranglehold.
No,
like I don't like Hunting or anything that he's about. But man, I can't turn Stranglehold up enough when it comes on.
Well, I saw him as a young man. He opened up for I think it was Aerosmith or somebody huge.
Yeah.
And he came in. He was wearing a Tarzan outfit. And he swung in on the vine. You know. So that was pretty impressive. And he rocked the guitar and screamed his balls off. And he was
Where was those shows? Like at the Sunrise Musical Theater or the Hollywood Sportatorium or somewhere?
I think that one was Hollywood Sportatorium. Yeah. That's where I saw Van Halen with David Lee Roth. That changed my life. Sunrise Musical Theater, I saw U2 when they just put out War.
Oh, shit.
And I saw Aerosmith when they were kind of in their drunk stage. They played like five nights in a row. I went every night.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so those are some good venues.
Yeah, yeah, those are good shows back in the day.
Hollywood Sportatorium, though, only had one lane in and one lane out. So if you had to take a leak,
yeah,
I mean, it'd be like the traffic would be so backed up. And I remember this one time, so I didn't have any money, never had any money. So I had a Volkswagen, but they used to put the batteries in the back, and it had rotted through, so there was a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
So I'm in line for the Hollywood Sportatorium. You can't move. We're drinking beer. Everybody's got to pee. We're peeing through the bottom. Everybody else is running out to the woods, and the cops are busting them. So.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So during that time, how did you get into tennis? You were into tennis, or did you?
Yeah, I saw. As soon as I saw the game of tennis, I was hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was so fluid and beautiful.
There is something fluid and totally beautiful about it.
And that's what I wanted. I know all I cared about, even more than winning, was the beauty of my strokes and the game and the spins and you know, I grew up with wooden rackets and It was tennis was hot at that time. It was a big sport.
Yeah, Jimmy Connors.
Yeah,
and then there was a Bjorn Borgs, but this might have been before.
Unfortunately, that's my era.
No, that's me too.
Yeah.
We're probably pretty close in age. I'm a 46.
Yeah, so. I'm close enough to that too.
Yeah, to agree with it.
To agree with it. Yeah.
So, man, playing tennis in Miami, I did it at times when I was a kid in the summer when I was there visiting my dad, and it sucked. It was very hot to be playing tennis there. Unless you were playing inside.
Oh, yeah, well, if you're out there all the time, you know, you can get used to it.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So that got you a scholarship to college.
Yeah. I got a scholarship to college, thank God.
How was it? Can I ask you this, David? Because there must be something kind of like psychologically screwy, because tennis is not a poor man's sport. And to never have money and then play tennis, it's almost like being a poor guy playing golf.
It was challenging.
Was it kind of weird? Like on a social level?
It was challenging. You know, I could get into the country clubs, but the way that I did it was that I was the guy that would, like, there were clay courts. I'd be up there at 7 in the morning sweeping the courts and lining them for $5 an hour. But I also then got a free membership.
Yeah. You wanted to play tennis.
I wanted to play tennis.
You really wanted to.
And I wanted to be at the place where all the great players were, you know. So I positioned myself in there however I could. And a lot of times there'd be, like, a pro there or something like that that would take an interest in me, that would kind of give me a break here and there. And
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Rod Laver's cousin, Ian Laver, who is deceased, he died in a plane crash, was one of the greatest pros. He put so many great players out of Florida. And I found out years later that my mom really wasn't paying him. He was he was still teaching me every week. And I didn't know that. Awesome. He never said a word to me. He just, and he treated me just like I was dousing him with money. He just took me under his wing. And yeah.
That's amazing. That's a great story, man. He saw you wanted to do it, and you were dedicated.
I lived it. You know, when I'm into something, I'm into it like a you know, tunnel vision sometimes.
Yeah.
I've learned as I've gotten older to be into a few different things, be tunnel vision into them when I'm into them, and then switch gears into something else.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And so that got you out. That got you out of the home you didn't want to be in.
Yeah.
And you went off to college. And
yeah, I didn't have 2 cents for college. Next thing I know, I've got a full ride and, you know.
And then you graduated from there?
Graduated from there.
And did you go out and play? You went out and played pro. It doesn't sound like it was a very successful pro tour.
Well, it's so tough. No, it wasn't. I mean, you could win 4 matches of qualifying.
Yeah.
But lose the 5th and not get in.
Sure.
You know, you could beat guys. I've beaten guys that are ranked in the world before.
Yeah.
But that's not a big deal. It's like you have to beat 5 of them and then 3 more of them all in a row to get somewhere. And that's even at the lowest level kind of satellite tournaments.
Yeah. That, you know, this thing kind of happened to Lars Ulrich.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, I remember his dad.
Torben's huge.
Yeah. Well, he was one of my favorites because he had long hair playing tennis when nobody had long hair. And I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
He's the one that turned Bjorn Borg on to it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was the Flying Dutchman. Like, I care way more. I care way more about Torben than Lars.
Well, check this out. I've hung with Torben about 4 times. Great times. I used to be signed to Lars's label, and Torben loved my band. So he lived in Seattle, and whenever we were up there, he was at the shows, and he was like a weird fucking guy from The Hobbit or something. He's got real long fingers, long beard, and you know, with the accent and whatnot. And yeah, it's so intense too, man.
He was like such a personality. I admired him very much. You know?
Yeah, great guy. Anyway, so how did you get to Macon to go to law school? That's weird.
Well, you know, I was in Florida, and I really didn't take school seriously to my last 2 years. So my first, you know, 2 years were not that good. Like, I didn't show up a lot and things like that. So I got up to a 3.0, and then I didn't have the money, or I didn't take the course for the LSAT and stuff like that. So
Did you think you wanted to be a lawyer?
You know, I had it in my back pocket. I was actually super happy. After college, I had a gig at an international tennis academy.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I had it made. Like, I had this condo, and it was right on the golf course. It was beautiful. It was at Bonaventure, I think it was called. Anyway, and my job was to play tennis with these kids during the day.
How awesome.
Especially if they got after school, and I'd drive them to tournaments. And then at night, I was singing in a band.
Right.
And then my mom came to see me one time, and she said I was wasting my brain and I should at least apply and all this kind of stuff. So I did, and then I got into a few schools, and I was like, what the hell, I'll try something different.
Yeah.
It was one hell of a detour, though.
Yeah, and going to Macon from Florida. I mean, I guess, were you in Northern Florida for regular college, undergrad?
I was at Florida Atlantic in Boca Raton on the beach, south. West Palm Beach County.
Yeah, that's...
It was a little school when I was there, tiny, and it was all you did. You wake up. I would only try to schedule classes like once or twice a week, and we were off to the beach in the morning, though.
Yeah.
I had this buddy I can't find. I'm trying to find him. He'd come into my room with a cooler full of beer, no shirt, those like bathing trunks.
Yeah.
And we'd start partying and head right to the beach.
Wow.
And I knew I had it good, so it took me 5.5 years to get out of that place.
You're living the life.
It was good. Yes.
Yeah. And so you went to law school in Macon. How long was that? Is that 3 years?
It's 3 years.
Yeah.
And actually,
how'd you do there? Did you start kicking ass?
Yeah, it was the first time I ever did really great in school. I loved it. It was like, it made me think. I was really intrigued and compelled.
Challenged.
I used to participate in class. I would talk a lot. If you had talked to anybody that went to school, they probably thought I talked too much. And that never really had been my thing. I just loved it. The Socratic method. It really made you think. They ask questions and you answer them and you think. I'd think about it on the way home. I studied. I was into it. I made law review. It was like, it really fits me. You know, law fits me.
Yeah.
I'm not like in the wrong field like sometimes it feels people are.
Right. So then you graduate law school and you went to Atlanta and worked for a huge law firm.
I did.
The one that represented the insurance companies and stuff?
It is, yeah. And I had an incredible mentor, like one of the best lawyers I've ever met to this day. I was in the office next to him. He took me everywhere with him. And so I'd work on the big cases with him, and he let me handle all the little cases on my own, you know, which was unheard of. You know, I had like free rein, and I was totally into it. And it was really incredible training for what I do now. I pull from that, from things that he's told me and things that I experienced those first 5 years, sure, all these years later.
Yeah.
It was really lucky.
Yeah.
It was really lucky.
Yeah. So you worked there for 5 years, you said?
I worked there for 5 years.
And
I switched sides because I started getting good at what I was doing because I'm very competitive. I was trying cases, winning them. So they were giving me bigger and bigger cases to handle. And so, you know, when I was resolving them, I was sending bigger and bigger checks to the other side. And I realized that I'm just as good or better than they are. I need to switch. And plus working for the insurance company is kind of soul sucking in a way.
I know a lot of people that do that, that switch sides because of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I help people, and there you're trying to, like, you know, it's a cynical way to look at life. You think everybody's fraudulent and everybody's scheming, and it kind of messes up your vision.
Yeah. So were you married then? Did you know your wife? Or
I met her in Atlanta.
Okay.
Yeah, I met her in Atlanta right when I switched sides to the representing injured people, and she pointed out to me how bad Atlanta sucked, and I had been to Austin already. I'd been to Austin for South by Southwest because I was doing some entertainment law. I just couldn't stay away, you know.
Right.
So I was here in 94 in Austin.
Yeah.
I was entertainment lawyer, and I was working with the guys that managed Follow For Now, which is David Ryan Harris now.
Sure.
And I was working a little bit with hanging with Jim Zumwalt and kind of thinking about maybe going with him. You know, he is the lawyer from Nashville. He took me to see Jackal and the Dude with the Chainsaw in Austin. Yeah. And but I didn't go that route. Okay. But I remember Austin was so cool back then in 94.
Oh, yeah. I was here. Yeah, it was a great place. So what was it then, 99 you decided to move here?
96. The Olympics hit in Atlanta, and I was out of there because the traffic already sucked, and I figured it was going to be such a cluster mess that I was like, that's a good time. So July or whatever, 96. And I moved here. I never seen 100-degree days every day.
Yeah.
Never seen that before. I thought Florida was hot. It's like, it seems like the sun's on top of you here.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, it didn't take you long because, I mean, did I start seeing your ads in the 90s or no?
Yeah. When I first moved here, I had a record label.
Okay.
I thought I had made enough money on a big case that I had in Atlanta, but I was woefully wrong. So I started a record label.
What was the label?
It's called Blacklist Records.
Who was on it?
I had a band that was called the Living Abortions out of Atlanta, and they actually got pretty big. I found them like when they were playing to five people, and then they started selling out Masquerade.
Wow! Yeah, I played Masquerade.
Yeah, it's a big place.
Yeah,
and then I worked with Smithwick Machine, which is
Masquerade's different levels. Yeah, this, right? They, and a dance club on the bottom.
Yeah, and
love that place.
They were doing Saturday nights at you know, the same place like Iggy Pop would play or something.
Yeah, sorry.
They got big, and I had Smithwick Machine out of Birmingham. They used to be Spunkadilly. They were like these cross-dressing guys that totally rocked, and I always liked the different angles like that. And I was about to sign this band called Blackula, where they had this guy that clogs on a.
Oh no, it's a movie. Sorry, go ahead.
The lead singer, he's got these big old chops. He's this skinny guy, and he clogs on this like platform, and it's got a microphone underneath it. And so he's clogging, and it's doing, it's got percussion while he's doing it. And, and they were just like from New Orleans, and it was just like swamp punk, and they were packing places. But I kind of ran out of money, or I could see that I was going to. So I said, shit, I got it. I took the bar here. And I thought I was going to cut my hair and go back and do it the hard way. And I met with this dude, and he convinced me that Austin's kind of weird. Maybe I should try to do a TV commercial with the long hair. And I did.
Who was that dude?
His name is Gary Davis. He He's an older guy, you know. Yeah. It was the hippest thing he ever did, you know. And it was the hippest idea. He's used it a lot and got a lot of mileage out of it. Like, he's the guy that you go to if you want something that's a little off color or whatever. And but I'll be damned if it didn't work. It's like I outgrew my little space and it was off to the races.
I totally remember you immediately. And the first ones were the ones where you said, I used to work for the big place. Now I can, now, you know.
Yeah, it was like, I used to work for the insurance companies. Don't you think what I know would be helpful
yeah,
to you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
then the tagline was like, I don't look like a lawyer, but it helps me sneak up on
them. Yeah.
That was his idea. It embarrassed me, but man, it worked. You know, so.
It did embarrass you?
It did, yeah. It was like,
because it's kind of a funny line, but Jesus, it really worked, right?
It worked like crazy.
So people felt like they could trust you. Like some guy that's all freaky that got a DWI might feel weird going to a straight, you know, looking guy.
You know, yeah. There's people have strong opinions of.
Are you friends with Charlie Rodman? Sorry,
Charlie who?
Rodman.
No.
He's also in your rocket, a rock guy as well. Sorry, go ahead. You said people. About the way you look and that.
Well, it's like, I think from what I think a lot of people probably think it's a joke, but the ones that think that it's cool, there's enough of them that I have a niche that I'm pretty busy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need everybody, but that my 2.5% of loyal people are all I need.
Yeah, of course. So that took off. And then did you start playing around that time or the label folded?
Let me see. I was in a band here playing bass when I first got here. Then I stopped music for a really long time. And then I went back to Florida. I sold my law practice here. I thought I had enough money again. Mistake number two about that. And I went back to Florida Atlantic, and I was the men's tennis coach. But I didn't have enough money, so I came back here. And I had sold my firm, so I was getting monthly income. So I just sat around, taught myself guitar, and started writing songs, like, all day. And those are still the songs, you know, kind of that my band is playing. We go to that back catalog all the time.
Wow.
That's why the chord progressions are so easy, and that's why I don't play guitar anymore in the bands that I'm in, because it's really elementary. But it was really a time to think about, you know, having all day to write a song, you can do a pretty good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, how prolific were you at that time? Were you writing like a song a day, or were you?
I probably had about 40 songs.
Wow, that's
a
lot.
I had 3 records.
Yeah, and you guys have a record, Oceania. How
yeah,
do you say that?
I think it's Oceana.
There's an I.
Yeah, but I think that it's silent.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
I'm not. I think that's what they call Australia, the New Zealand area.
Okay.
But it fit in with what I was doing. It's actually a lyric in one of the tunes.
Right.
So
so who did you record that with?
Oceana, I recorded at Wire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And with Stuart or no?
No, with Joey Benjamin.
I don't know.
And then we mastered it at Terra Nova.
Yep. That's a good place.
Yeah, it was good because the first two records I did were actually in my own music studio, which is a converted garage, you know, separate building at my property that I don't live in anymore. And so, yeah, to have a real studio with walls of effects and all kinds of compressors and huge board was kind of cool.
And you went, did you use the tape machine there?
No, I was about to go back and do that and use tape because I'm recording again.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But I met and have become good friends with Paul Sorosky with
of course.
Rock Army Records yeah. and Podunk and all that. And, you know, we kind of really like each other, and he's really fun, and so I'm doing it there, and he does a great job.
That's good,
man. His stuff sounds killer. I got a couple new things we're working on.
Oh, great. Great. I've known Paul for a long time, and he's a smart and very, very able cat and such a sweet dude.
Amazingly sweet. I like sweet people.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Mean people suck.
Yeah, you seem like a sweet guy yourself. So what do you want to do with the Dharma Kings? Like, just keep on making music and making music that you feel you're connected to and feel like you're saying something and putting it out and doing shows and...
Yeah, I guess it's all that, and it's like...
Do you want a tour? Do people want a tour anymore? Really?
You know, I've been trying to work I'm just trying to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, man.
Just try to keep moving forward. I don't know where it leads you. you know, certain doors have opened for me and I walk through them. Like, for example, you calling me.
Yeah.
And me being here, you know, it's like, I don't have any great aspirations, and I'm not turning anything down. I don't need it for my ego. I do it a lot for therapy.
It feels good.
It feels good. It doesn't hurt my business either, you know. I mean, you know, it's like, hey, the attorney that rocks does rock.
Does actually rock.
Yeah, does actually rock, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to be 6 months from now or a year. I just want to do it while I can.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. And I think that's where everyone's at, maybe, with it. Maybe some people have a little loftier aspirations. But I think as you get older, you just want to make the music, man. And it's fun to make it, you know?
I mean, it's interesting, you know, to be excited about something. A lot of people, you know, my age aren't that excited about much, except maybe money, or I don't know what they are, but they're not, or they drink a lot because they're, you know, they're disappointed.
David, that's a lot of my conversation with Ian McLaughlin on that podcast is like, did you ever go see him at Lucky Lounge? Or like, did you ever see him?
No, I wish I would. I mean,
I saw that guy on a Saturday night being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with the Faces and like jamming with Ron Wood and why am I drawing a blank on his name, the drummer guy that played with The Who. And then, you know, the second guy.
Yeah, the second guy. I can picture him.
And the guy from Simply Red singing, because Rod Stewart wasn't singing that night. But he had this connection with the music that he was playing. And the guy said, look, it's making the hair on my arm stand up. Just when I think about it. Connection with the music, connection with the guys, connection with the audience, connection with his instrument. And then I saw him a week and a half later for free at Lucky Lounge at a happy hour. And it was the same intensity, the same connection with the music, the same connection with the dudes he was playing with. He had the same connection with Scrappy as he did with Ron Wood. You know, it was beautiful.
That sounds real honest.
Yeah, it was real. And that a lot of what I was saying to him is like, how do you stay that connected and that interested? You know, because that's what seems to happen when you get older. Is like, it's weird. People don't react to things like they used to. Things don't make you as excited as they used to. But then there's still kind of these weird people that get old and still get excited about shit as they get. I feel like I do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you look at your reason for doing it. I mean, if you're doing it to get famous and then your time might have come and gone a little bit, you know, if you're doing it for the love of what you're doing,
yeah,
then you can be in love with the process and not with the end result.
It's exactly what I'm in love with. Yeah, I'm in love with making stuff. Yeah, man. Dude, I'm so glad I met you. Plus a fellow Miami guy.
Yeah, how weird is that?
It's totally weird. Do you ever go back?
As little as possible. I have family there, though. Me too. God, man.
That's, what a terrible town.
That's one place where you leave and you get into the Austin airport and you're like, oh, thank God I can breathe again.
I almost kissed the ground when I land here. Because it's like their soul leaves. It's worse than L.A. It's weird.
Yes.
Except the food's amazing.
Cuban food.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Cuban?
Yeah. Yeah, both of my parents were born there. And came in like 1959.
Wow. Yeah. Like on a boat and all
no,
that?
No, in a plane.
In a plane.
Yeah, before they had to take a boat. Yeah, they were okay. I mean, that's an interesting culture, you know, and it's interesting two guys like you and I that were like, you know, I'm not staying here. And we came here to this place because this has some kind of refuge. Although it does. I do like Atlanta.
Well, it was weird being born and raised in a place where you still feel like a stranger in a strange land. You know, it's a very fast, mine is very fast, and everybody, you know, it's about screwing somebody over in business or being super hot looking and better looking than everybody else. It's very plastic.
Car, watch, shoes, clothes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't real. I couldn't wait to get the hell out.
Yeah. That's the same way I was, except I wasn't really raised there. I mean, I lived here when I was a teenager in the 80s for like a year and a half, and my mom died. I moved to Miami and lived with my dad. So that's the only time I really lived outside of being born there. I used to go there and visit when I was a kid, you know, a few times a year. But yeah, I experienced Columbus High School. Did you ever, you know that
I'm familiar
one?
With Miami Columbus, yeah.
Yeah, I went there for a little bit and then...
That's too bad.
Yeah. It's weird. How do you like what's happened with Austin? I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot more going on. You were involved in that Batfest pretty heavily.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I mean, Batfest was cool, and it's not a little town anymore. You know, I had to move out of the property that I love. My daughter goes to the Waldorf school. We lived out east, and I used to be able to get there when she was in kindergarten, you know, in 20 minutes, and then it started becoming an hour.
Yeah.
So I had to rent a house right next to the Waldorf school and maintain two properties, and I don't dig the traffic. And it's amazing, though, that this town can absorb all these people and still have kind of what makes it cool still happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's happened to Congress Street and all this stuff is kind of sad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's good for my business, all these people here. You know, there's more of a pool. But I would trade it for a small town again. I actually kind of have my eye a little bit on Wimberley when I can start, you know, maybe cutting back a little bit. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. How much do you work? Like,
I work Monday through Friday.
Right.
About 4 hours a day.
Okay.
Because the traffic is so bad in Oak Hill, you know, I can't go in the morning and I have to leave by 3 p.m. So that was an excuse to make my day shorter. You know, there was a time where...
do you have like court days?
I don't... Like... There's three lawyers that I work with.
Right. Okay.
They do all the boots on the ground stuff. Okay. I meet with people all the time. I'm kind of like the general behind the scenes.
Okay.
I think about marketing a lot, you
know.
Yeah. But I like to go in, you know, if I stay away for too long, you know, I'm hanging out in my bathrobe and my dreads down and, you know, I just start feeling like kind of like a bum, you know, it's really good for me to get dressed up a little and get to an office and, you know, have actual, you know, intelligent things to do.
Right.
It's a real good mix with playing music and, you know, hanging out with the family.
What, who have you seen lately that you like here? Musically, like who are your guys? I saw you did a show with 333. You friends with Tony?
I'm friends with all those guys. You know, Nathan, the guitar player, is a lawyer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I try to refer him a lot of stuff. I mean, if I can't handle it, I try to get it over to him. He's building up his practice. Nathan Snyder. I think Tony's great. I think the band's great. They made me. I played with them one night at Stubbs.
Oh, cool.
And you know, they kind of blew us off the stage, and that's when I decided I needed to switch personnel, upgrade, go to two guitars instead of just one. They had such a big sound. They had two guitars, keyboard player. They were super tight.
Yeah.
So I credit him for having me to step up my game.
Yeah, Tony's a real good director. I mean, I watched Push Monkey put songs together and write songs. So we had a residency with them, and I toured with them when they got signed and their record came out. They took our band out with us, and I saw that guy work a lot behind the scenes, and he is a very smart, driven guy. Like he knows how to make stuff come together and be exciting when you listen to it. You know, he's a great producer, probably.
Yeah, he's a driven, talented person, and he's a humble person.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he's complimentary and friendly to me, and that, you know, I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
I've seen, let's see, who else? I like Dead Things Don't Bleed. Those are half of the guys from my band, the Mud Doctors.
Okay.
And there's a couple, I like this band, Force of Rage. They're playing, there's the singer from Raging Saint.
I remember Raging Saint.
Yeah, so they're back. I'm drawing a blank right now. There's a lot of great bands. Those kind of stand out to me.
Yeah. And so, man, you're a rock guy. What do you define your music as, metal or as rock? Or,
well, you know, I'm kind of stuck in these songs that I wrote years ago because, you know, I'm trying to get back to writing now. You know, I'm into doing all kinds of music, you know. But, you know, you bring on new personnel, it's like, we'll learn these tunes. So and there's a show coming up. How it is when you have a show coming up?
I know exactly what you mean.
It's like, well, we can't really be writing right now. We got this show. So,
yeah.
And I keep having these shows, and the next one's bigger than the next one after that.
Right.
So I think I'm going to take some time off and start writing again. That's why I was excited to be in a band with Adam Temple. He brings kind of more of like a funky thing. And, you know, he's pretty good, and
yeah,
we just haven't really had a chance to just create. We were doing it with Derek. We had something cool going, but then yeah, it just time commitments. It just didn't work out. I was real excited about that one. That was, we were heading a new direction with no bass player, Derek Morris, Adam Temple, a really
was
killer
Derek
drummer
on the left.
Yeah,
left hand.
Yeah,
wow.
Like it was a Doors configuration.
I think he did that with me once. Maybe he didn't. There's another guy too, Sweeney Tidball, that used to have to do that. There was a gig where I couldn't afford the bass player, so I'd just be like, just play your left hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love rock. I mean, it all comes back, you know. I mean, I love...
The Beatles.
Love the Beatles. And then, you know, I like a lot of the hard stuff, you know, Nirvana, everybody.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. What do you think about these new ways that people are putting out music? Because it's a whole part of it, and you were part of that. You had a label, you were in entertainment law, like sort of the U2 way that they did it, and the Foo Fighters version of like actually making a documentary about every song on the record, which is amazing, and I'm grateful that they did it, but that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, the things really changed, you know. It's like the labels are not making money really anymore, so the people, there's not really people that have a lot of money, it seems, to come in and get behind a band and push them. That's why I think these bands that had like one minor little hit from 24 years ago can still go around and tour, because people have heard of them and they haven't heard of anybody, any of these new bands coming up.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's sad, but it kind of in a way has created an opportunity for me, in that I've got kind of backing. I can take care of myself.
Day job.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, like, I'm doing an animated video of a song that we just put together.
Awesome.
That's one of our best things. So I just retained a guy from Philadelphia last night. And, you know, you can, it's a different thing now. You boost it on Facebook, you boost it on Viral, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a different experience.
But if you can make that leap now from where nobody knows your stuff to like even a minor hit, you've done it, because it's just not happening really anymore.
Yeah. And you seem to be able to get some gigs where you can position yourself to at least get in front of some audiences to, you know.
It took me a little while to figure out how things work.
Yeah.
But as I figure it out more, you know, I hope to have more of that positioning, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in this band Skyrocket. It's a cover band, and it's essentially a day job. It affords me to do this podcast, to, you know, go and, you know, write songs and, you know, lose money at gigs that I want to just play, you know, and not feel horrible about it.
Well, people want to hear what they know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that kind of is in line with what I was just talking about. Yeah. You know, you're playing covers, they know it, so they'll pay the money to do it. But if you're a new band and nobody's heard it and there's no backing,
it's tough.
Yeah. It's so if you can somehow bridge that gap and make the leap, you know, which, you know, let's get down to it. It's like a lot of times it takes the push is money.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you're also smart, and you're not scared to cross collateralize. Is that the right words to use?
Cross pollinate.
Like in your personal bio on the law firm website is a link to Dharma Kings, which I think is cool.
Yeah, you know, I'm already so far outside the box, you know, that outside.
Yeah.
What other lawyers are doing. Well, let's just take it. It's like, I'd take it to more of the extreme. If you go to my law firm's Facebook page, it's like me with my hair down and I'm singing and I got like this big crazy red hat on. It's like, you know, everybody else has got the same haircut, the same power tie and blue suit. And, you know, they're either trying to look handsome or tough or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just out here floating on my own.
Well, I like you, man, and I love this story. It's funny because I was talking about this friend of mine today too, and he was like, "What are you doing today?" I was like, "Oh, I've got David Comey's coming over to do the podcast." Like, no way! Like, I would love to hear that dude's story, because you are really famous here.
I mean, you know, I hang out with my buddy Stevie Salas, and he's like a real famous guitar player. He's got guitars named after him. He plays with Rod Stewart and Mick Jagger.
No one comes up to him at the grocery store, just you.
No, he hangs out with me here in Austin. Oh my God. He goes, everybody knows you and nobody knows me, and I sold 2 million fucking records.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's pretty funny.
I think it is. I saw a parody of your billboard, which, I mean, that's flattering. I mean,
You know, a lot of people do, you know, people do stuff like that and people slag me, but some people really love me. And it's like, I think about Keith Richards. What did he say? Any publicity is good
publicity. Yeah. And you know, man, the only reason people are slagging you, it's the same dynamic that happens with Bob Schneider. I mean, I've been friends with that dude for over 20 years. And I've seen sort of the backlash of, you know what I mean? There's people just say it. And it's like, you know what? You're just saying that because he's on the side of a bus and you're not. Saying that because you're on a billboard and they're not. You know what I mean? I mean, those are things that kind of come out as petty crap.
You know, I just figure it's, you know, it's that's part of the game.
Yeah. If you're going to be that well known, there's going to be sides that adore you and sides that just don't like you.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Everybody's entitled to their opinion.
You got your wife and your daughter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather have somebody have a strong negative opinion about me than be invisible.
Right.
You know, especially when I'm still in my earning years. You know, I got mouths to feed. Yeah. I got future college to pay for. One of my wife's favorite activities is swiping that credit card. Man, I gotta keep it going.
Does she work?
I'm just kidding, sweetie.
In the law business?
No, my wife. She went to art school, awesome. Savannah College of Art and Design. Is that what it is? Yeah, mm-hmm. SCAD. And she's a great mom. She's a homemaker. She does art when she can. She's a belly dancer in a troupe, and she just.
So you guys are an arty family.
I guess so. My daughter's school is real artsy. I just went to a recital. She plays bass and reads music, and she's 11. And so, yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way, but I'd have to answer yes to that question.
You could secure yourself a bass player that way.
Yeah, she doesn't like my music, though.
Oh, really? Oh, because she's 11 and a girl. There's probably a lot of One Direction going on in your house.
Yeah, well, yeah.
How does that work?
She's just starting, yeah. Yeah, I'm the low man on the totem pole. She did like, though, she surprises me. She liked Black Sabbath, I think she liked War Pigs. She liked Led Zeppelin and Gorillaz. She was into them for a while. But all those kids end up in that hip hop world, you know. They lose me there.
Yeah. They lose a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of dads get lost in the hip hop.
I guess they're saying something relevant. I think these people like to move their butts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting because you do. There's a coming from the music that you signed and the music that you find exciting. There's a similar thing in that music. That's exciting to the people that, you know what I mean? There's some danger going on in there, which I think that sometimes rock, or at least mainstream rock, is lost, don't you think? I mean, some danger gone. And I just got this new Rolling Stone, and they got like the 40 best or the 50 best albums of the year. And I was astonished at how many people on that list and those albums were my age or older.
Exactly.
Spoon's in there. And Spoon isn't a new band. That's not a young band. Those dudes are in their 40s, just like me. I'm the same age as Spoon.
I mean, we're really from an era where a lot of great music came out of. I don't know. I just don't hear that much. That, you know, too much. I feel like now somebody's trying to sound like what's happening now, so they're just like cloning each other, and it's like this downward spiral down the toilet.
That's what I was trying. That's exact. Man, I was talking to Ian Moore about that yesterday. I was like, "What is the sound of now? Like, what is the sound?" Like the 70s was like late 70s, you know, there was like punk rock and there was disco and there was still big rock, like the big touring rock bands. And then there was like new wave sort of defined that early 80s sound. And then metal sort of defined, I guess, metal and like synthesizers.
Yeah, well, there was a split at one point. I thought metal and punk, and I kind of went the punk route for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, hardcore, like into the Ramones and...
Yeah.
Sex Pistols and all that. I've seen them around 17 times, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I took my wife on their last tour, followed them around a little bit.
That's amazing. You got to see Johnny. I mean, Joey. Sorry.
Yeah.
I met Johnny Ramone.
I saw him in, it was Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah.
The Button, maybe?
Yeah, the Buttons. The Button North.
Yeah.
Because the Button South was in Miami.
Yeah. The Button North, and there was like 40 people there.
Wow.
And I was on a table holding a pitcher of beer, drinking it. So I was standing up on a table, and I was about, I don't know, 15 feet from Joey Ramone.
Wow.
And they rocked so hard, and it was like the greatest thing I ever saw in my life.
Wow. Man, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Any big plans? I know you've got the Eddie Trunk thing, but that will have already happened by the time this comes out. Do you know Eddie?
No, I never even heard of him before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but evidently a lot of people do know him.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's a guru of rock, man. He's like the guy that you can look to and he'll tell you stuff.
Stump the Trunk, I heard. That's impossible.
Yeah, that is impossible. Jason McMaster, that's how I found out Jason was married. He was on that show.
Yeah, they're playing, his other band, Broken Teeth, is playing on that. Yeah,
good. All right, well, man, I guess people can go and look up the Dharma Kings on Facebook. You guys have a good Facebook page?
We do. We keep it pretty content full. You have some
videos and stuff on there. And Oceana is available on iTunes. Is it on Spotify as well?
The Dharma Kings record's on Spotify. My Mud Doctor's record is on Spotify. And then my David Comey solo album's on Spotify.
All of it. What, we didn't talk about, did you say the Mud Doctors? I didn't even see that anywhere. What?
Yeah, that was my second record. We're still playing stuff off of it with Dharma Kings.
Okay, but you guys don't play anymore. You're not active Mud Doctors, just Dharma
Kings. No, two of the guys that I was with are in Dead Things Don't Bleed, which I love those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, man, people can find all that stuff on there. And also, you can look up Comey and Morrow.
Comey and Morrow, or just Attorney That Rocks.
Yeah, or Attorney That Rocks. Yeah, really, you don't, I mean, really, all you do is Google Attorney That Rocks.
Yeah, I got the trademark on it. So let me know if somebody else is trying to use it.
No. Is there any other rock people? There's Shane Mott. Do you know that guy? He's a rock and roll dentist.
No, I don't.
He's not the dentist that rocks, but he's the rock and roll dentist.
That's cool. So, I saw the rock and roll apartment locator. I think I've... there's more and more of it.
People took a fucking...
Yeah.
You started a thing, man.
Yeah.
All right, David Comey, man. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming by.
All right, thank you, John.
What did I tell you guys? He's cool as shit, right? What a cool guy. I'm glad I met him. I'm glad that he came over. What a nice guy. David Comey, thank you for coming by. The Attorney That Rocks and his band, Dharma Kings. Get out there, check them out. You like to rock, get out there and see the Dharma Kings. And get their album, Oceana. It's out. I don't know why I couldn't spell it. I thought Oceana didn't have an I there. And here I am with a lawyer totally mispronouncing it. What a dork. Well, that happens, and I'm that guy. So thank you for listening to another episode of How Did I Get Here? You're going to hear a little bit more of the Dharma Kings right now. You can look them up on the interwebs. While you're there, you can also find us on Facebook and like our Facebook page. You can find out what's going on with us. If this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, we are available on iTunes. We are on Stitcher, on various different podcast locations. Just go there, look up How Did I Get Here podcast, and get involved. Get subscribed. We put out 2 episodes a week. Like our Facebook page, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy. You'll find out what shows are coming up. You'll find out what I'm doing with my life. I play music. I do stuff. And I'm the podcaster that rocks. Okay, let's hear some more music from the Dharma Kings. Thanks again, David Comey. Have a great one, you guys. Listen, Christmas is coming up. Do what you got to do. Have a great weekend. Come see Skyrocket tomorrow night, Saturday, the 20th. Of December at a 1-to-1 bar. Here's some more Dharma Kings. Let's get down.
Take the way you think, though your rotten words will sting. something from something. So you know what to have to do. Break the chains of tyranny. Wake up and fight to be free. To think oneself in true. You know what you have to do. Break the chains of tyranny.